Welcome to the Big Green Politics Podcast. With the European elections coming up on the 23rd of May, we wanted to talk to Europe's biggest Green Party, Die Grünen, the German Greens. They experienced the Green Wave back in fall 2018, sweeping into government or into second place in a few states. Since then, they've remained high up in the polls, and now, in the national polls, they're holding the second position after Merkel's CDU party. We talked to the international coordinator of the German Greens, Jamila Schäfer, about how the German Greens manage being a party whose policies can differ radically from state to state, what their strategy is to deal with the threat of the far right, and what legacy has Merkel left on German politics. Take a listen and enjoy. Jamila, welcome. Thanks for coming onto the podcast.
Yeah, thank you for giving me the opportunity to be part of it.
Thank you. First of all, congratulations. The German Greens are doing so well right now. At the national level, they're pulling at about 18%, which means if there was an election right now, they would become the second largest group in parliament. At the regional level, they form part of the government in 9 out of 16 federal states, and correct me if I'm wrong. And last year in October, they became the second party in Bavaria and has at the state elections. So there's a huge momentum and green wave taking over Germany right now. Why do you think German voters are basically flocking to the Greens at the moment?
Our poll started rising during the Jamaica coalition talks when we were negotiating with the conservatives and the liberals in the late 2017 after the federal elections. And we could get much attention on our political visions and on our solutions in the media, and also why they are different from the conservative and the liberal solution, and why we have maybe more a clue about how to change the future and to tackle the major challenges. And we didn't have to make some compromises in the end because the liberals left the negotiations. So there was no coalition agreement. And furthermore, afterwards, we had a new executive committee elected on the federal level. And we decided to bring radical analysis together with realistic solutions. And we're trying to concentrate on the major challenges of society. We were also starting with our process for a new basic program for the party, where we started a huge process where all of our members can be part of and discuss the major challenges of society and our green answers to this. And that raised much attention to our party and our answers to the problems which society is facing now. And I think topics like the climate crisis, extinction of species, and saving peace and democracy are more discussed in society than before. And we also see a repoliticalization that we benefit from. And I think these are the major reasons why we are strong in the polls right now.
Yeah, and this is really inspiring for other Green parties around the world to see how successful the German Greens are and how well they're doing. And it's also interesting to see how the way German Greens do green politics may differ across the country. For example, in Hesse, the Greens did brilliantly, and they campaigned on a platform of refugee solidarity, climate action, and just left social policies. On the other hand, in Baden-Württemberg, for example, they are the dominant party in government, but they tend to be much more conservative and just generally have quite a different stance on many issues. How does that work? How do you make these different shades of green work and but still stay united as Greens in Germany?
Yeah, of course, we are in different roles in the federal level. Yeah, we are in the opposition role. And in a few states, we are also governing with the party that we attack on the federal level for their politics. So, of course, sometimes it's hard to figure out a common communication because, of course, our people in the federal state governments have to do some compromises that are not basically what we are saying in our program or something like that. So I think it's always very important to communicate when compromises are compromises and compromises are not the party program, but also to stress out that what were our green negotiation successes and to have a common storytelling on the state level and also on the federal level towards the major challenges of society. And this is something which worked out really good in the last months, because we really concentrated on a good internal communication between the different levels and to be very precise in our work behind the scenes to communicate the common points, common strategy. Mm-hmm. And I think that also makes us stronger as a whole party.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this whole professionalization of the Green Party and building the structure and staying united, I think Green parties around the world look up to German Greens for that. So that's very admirable. And again, it's inspirational. I want to go back to something that you mentioned, the climate crisis being a big reason why German Greens are a rising force in Germany right now. We see the youth strikes and communities in general getting mobilized, demanding immediate action to tackle the climate crisis. And there's no doubt that this has fostered the political will to do so. We're seeing more and more politicians getting on board with the agenda. They're coming up with policies. A good example for this is the Green New Deal that has been proposed in the US and then very recently in the UK as well. But then there are, of course, people and politicians who oppose the Green New Deal. And one of their arguments is Germany has tried this. It backfired. It didn't work. And they're referring to Germany's Green Deal Energiewende, which was adopted 10 years ago in 2010. But then there are some people that say, no, the Green Deal in Germany has worked. So I want to get your opinion on this debate. How do you think this policy did when it comes to lowering the emissions and when it comes to transitioning from coal, natural gas and nuclear to renewable energy?
Yeah, I think that those people who say it didn't work quite well are not including every sum of the calculation. In 2011, we decided to exit nuclear energy, which was also a result of the Fukushima mm-hmm. accident. And it has been a huge success for us and the anti-atomic energy movement. And of course, this has had a few negative implications for the CO2 emissions. Mm-hmm. But I think it would be wrong to cheer for more atomic energy now, because we did the exit of nuclear energy for a reason. Nuclear and atomic energy comes along with a number of problems, mm-hmm. with a large security risk and high costs. So we as German Greens are strong advocates for more renewable energy, and the Energiewende is a strong tool exactly for this transformation. And when we Greens introduced the underlining policies in 2000, mm-hmm. Germany's energy mix only had a small share of renewable energies. And today it's nearly 40% of Germany's electricity that comes from renewable sources. So it reduced the cost of photovoltaic systems dramatically. And of course, we still have problems. We have still a few laws that hinder the shift to more renewable energies that the German government is introducing. And there are also bureaucratic hurdles by taxing renewable energy generated from individual households. Mm-hmm. For us, it's completely clear that if we want to stay in the Paris Agreement and take that for granted, we also need coal exit. And we have a strategy for that. And now we had a coal commission that also voted in favor for an exit of coal emissions. And I think that's the way we are now going. And I think that the Energiewende is a good tool for this energy transformation.
Yeah, there seems to be an issue, especially when it comes to coal, I guess, and when it comes to the targets that have been set by certain institutions. Like in August 2018, the Environment Ministry said the country will fail to meet its targets to cut carbon emissions by 2020. And then there were more bad news when it comes to Germany's responsibility to the EU. The country is expected to fall short on pretty much all its EU emission reduction and clean energy targets for 2020. I was trying to come up with reasons why it's hard for the government to make moves on this issue, especially considering the country has such a strong green presence. And like you mentioned, the Coal Exit Commission suggested a pathway to a phase out of the fossil fuel by 2038.
Mm-hmm.
And the Greens in the parliament immediately introduced concrete proposals to implement the commission's recommendations. But then the AFD demanded the government to reject the recommendations of the commission and focus instead on saving jobs in the coal industry. And time again, they've been questioning Germany's national consensus on the role human beings play when it comes to climate crisis. Is that a big factor, that part of the political spectrum? Is that a part of the reason why the government may be struggling to make radical moves on this issue?
Yeah, I think so, actually, because, of course, we have a strong coal sector in Germany, and in a few regions, there are lots of people working in the coal sector. And we all know that the conservatives are also very strongly connected to the coal industry and try to represent also their interests. And I think that really is making obstacles in the whole transformation process. And I think we definitely need a good plan or a good budget for those coal region to transform also their economy. But we also have some concrete demands on that that could allow us to stop coal energy by 2030 and have 100% renewable energy by 2030. And I think that we really need to get rid of this fear that is connected with the question, and also see that mm-hmm. we cannot sell it as social politics to save jobs that are actually harming the climate. You know, if you try to put that against each other, the social question and the climate question, and you try to say that you have to decide on which side you're standing, you are decided to say no to both. Because, of course, the climate question, especially if you look at it from a global perspective, what we Greens are doing, is completely mm-hmm. clear that it's a social question. Because the poorest people are already affected a lot by the coal emissions that we are producing in the industrial countries. I think it's very strange if we're also telling the people that are dependent of jobs in the coal sector that they will have a future with their taking exactly the jobs they are having. Now, we should invest in better and climate-friendly alternatives.
Absolutely. And I guess just transition for those communities in the mining regions, that's why that should be a part of the green agenda as well.
Exactly.
But I mean, of course, this is not only happening in Germany. We see that in the European Parliament as well, the right wing preventing the Parliament's progress when it comes to the climate agenda. Half of all votes against climate and energy decisions in the European Parliament come from right-wing parties. Mm. So there's absolutely a pattern there. And it also seems like there's a lot at stake for Angela Merkel, especially considering she won't be running for re-election. So this is her last term, and she has a lot of targets to reach. Even the Director of Greenpeace International, Jennifer Morgan, said, unless she turns her full attention to reducing emissions in Germany, particularly from coal, with clear support for a phase out of coal by 2030, her legacy will not be green, it'll be dirty brown. So it's interesting to see how much of the green agenda she'll be able to get done as she's running out of time. But Merkel leaving is also interesting because it tells us a lot about the current political scene in Germany. Do you think that's centrism failing in Germany?
I would say that Angela Merkel really depoliticalized the people in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
There was hardly any controversy about political visions during her time leading at the government. And I think that made politics seem to be an event that simply was administrating some things that were considered to happen anyway.
Mm-hmm.
This was exactly what made people feel powerless and was a breeding ground for populism. So it's a task that we have to take to make the conservatives' refusal and Angela Merkel's refusal to accept the challenges and to make steps for a better future for a strength of progressive politics, because otherwise the right wing will actually win.
Mm-hmm. And their messaging will be more relatable.
Yeah, exactly. Because if you do not really see that there are some political visions discussed and you can be part of this discussion, and there's only someone standing and saying, I have to do that because I have to do that,
mm-hmm.
there's not very much attractiveness of being part of a political system and being involved in a constructive way. I think it's just a very, very dangerous development that this depoliticalization of Angela Merkel has caused.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In recent years, the media has focused on the political energy that was coming from the right and the rise of the far right, the AfD. And we see very different messaging when it comes to the AfD and the Greens, but then AfD has seen a downfall and a decrease in the recent polls, while the Greens have been consistently doing better and better. Do you think that's a part of that is like a result of hope defeating hate, that positive messaging of the Greens defeating fear-mongering, negative, hateful messaging of the AfD?
Yeah, absolutely. I totally think that because there is a lack of solidarity in our society. And it's currently also instrumentalized by the far-right forces. But it's our task to offer an inclusive solidarity, mm-hmm. not an exclusive one like racism. And a confident policy that really tackles the problems instead of using slogans and populism to just get stronger as a political force. So we can see that this is right now working, that progressive politics is getting a benefit from this crumbling of the conservatives and the social democrats. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is also the only weapon that we have against right-wing populism, right?
Absolutely.
To talk about the future in a positive way, but also talking about the challenges in a serious way and show people how they can take part in politics and raise their own voices.
Yeah. Does this also create a certain level of polarization in the society? Because the AfD represents a Germany gazing back to the idealized image of a closed-off society. And then you have the Greens functioning as the antidote to the AfD, offering the opposite image, a Germany that's socially liberal, open immigration, outward-looking. So when you have these two parties from two ends of the political spectrum, I actually want to explore what kind of political division the society may be facing today. Because if the green wave in Germany is not only due to a temporary dissatisfaction with Germany's centrist ruling parties, but if it's because of a wider shift in politics, in terms of the main political divide shifting from that classic conflict of right versus left to something bigger, something different, something more than that, then that may mean the green wave is not temporary. It's not a temporary trend, and it's here for good. And that could be open society versus closed society, cosmopolitans versus isolationists, or pan-Europeans versus Eurosceptics. What do you think?
Yeah, we can see that there is a division also on those questions, of course. And I think it's also getting stronger with the way our social media communication works, because there's also a tendency that people talk less with each other. And mm-hmm. if you see some Twitter debates, I mean, maybe it's also more a problem of the German Twitter, I don't know. But you're seeing the other political spectrum discussing, and you're discussing against them, but you're completely in your own
echo chamber or bubble.
Yeah, but you are seeing what they are posting, and you're like getting aggressive on it. And I think that this is also a new tendency of division, but I think the fundamental division is still the social division. Mm-hmm. Affordable housing, tax justice, or combating poverty are central political issues. And some political forces conduct them as envious debates against migrants and play the poor off against each other. Mm-hmm. And this also works because globalization has caused a race to the bottom against social and environmental standards in some areas where many, especially poor people, suffer from. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why some try to turn the struggle for social justice into a struggle from nationality A against nationality B. But social justice and the struggle for social justice works best when we work transnationally for social ecological shaping of our economy. Mm-hmm. So, for example, we need common rules for a social and ecological system and global economy, trade and stuff. So I think this will be best achieved if states do not allow themselves to be played off against each other by big companies for the cheapest tax and wage conditions, but instead finding a common strategy for common standards. And this is why also the social question that tackles everyone is a question of global justice and also international cooperation. And I think this is the discussion and the framework where we have to get to fight this national answers to social issues.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Euroskeptics and the far right, Matteo Salvini of Italy has warned of a surge of the far right across Europe in the European elections. Can you see this happening? What are your predictions?
Yeah, you can definitely see, and this is what also poll predictions say on the national levels. If you put them together, you can see that the Social Democrats and the Conservatives are shrinking. So the old powerhouses of the European Parliament are crumbling in this election.
The centrists of today.
Yeah, these are the predictions for the European election. And the problem is that in recent years, policies have seemed powerless towards the major changes and challenges that the people were facing. So the far right, but also progressive forces could benefit from it. And the predictions also say that the far right could be way stronger in the next European Parliament than they are right now. But we can also see that also the progressive parties, the progressive forces could go out stronger after the next election. So we totally see that this election will be, a very important one to decide which way Europe will go in the next years. And this is also why we're now in a strong mode of mobilization. And it's for our party is going quite well. The whole party is totally motivated. And we recently were talking about the fact that even more local branches bought some posters and merch for the elections now than in the last federal election. So we're really having a good mobilization and we're having new members. Every month we're having like way bigger number of members in our party and there's much motivation and the polls of the right-wing parties are going down. Yeah, we can see that these European elections could also be a huge progress for the progressive forces. And this is why we are stressing that our answer on the recent challenges is positive change. And this is what we are calling for in the whole of Europe. And this is why I'm hoping that this campaign will also be a big success for the progressive forces in Europe.
Can you also summarize the focus of the German Greens during the campaigning period?
Of course, one of our major topics is fighting climate change. This is one of our first goals, that Europe has to reclaim a leading role here and be a good example for having a sustainable economy and showing how to fulfill the Paris Agreement. And secondly, we fight for an open Europe that is based on the principle of free, pluralistic and equitable societies. And thirdly, we will work for social security by, for example, establishing minimum wages in the whole European Union and reclaiming political power against market believers. And lastly, we also want that Europe is more united in international affairs and is a strong voice for peace and human rights. So I think that, Europe has to be the strong voice for multilateralism, human rights and democracy and peace in the world. And that's also something that we fight for in our campaign.
I also want to find out about your own vision for a Green Europe, because I know that everyone has their own vision. What does your Green Europe look like? What do you see when you picture a more Green Europe?
My vision for a more Green Europe would be a society where it's okay to be different, where people are living in diversity together without being afraid, where sustainability is the norm, and we have a social and ecological economy, and where question of gender and nationality are only covered in history books, and justice and freedom are respected on a global scale for everyone.
That's a really positive note to end on, actually. So fingers crossed. hope that'll become a reality one day. And I really hope that with the upcoming European elections, we can move forward and get a bit closer to that vision, a green Europe. Thank you, Jamila, for coming on to the podcast.
Thank you very much.
All right, folks, that's our show. You can follow us on Twitter at BigGreenPawPod. And if you haven't already, subscribe to the show so you can hear it every 2 weeks. You can find us on any podcast platform.
If you're subscribed already, please do leave us a rating or review. It helps people find the show. And lastly, if you want to give us feedback, email us at biggreenpoliticspodcast@gmail.com. Thanks so much and see you in 2 weeks.